Translation. Sukadeva Swami said, "Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramchandra, accepted an acharya and performed sacrifices, yagyas, with opulent paraphernalia. Thus, he himself worshipped himself, for he is the Supreme Lord of all demigods." I'll just quickly do the... Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. 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 Purport by Prabhupada. Savahanam Achutyitya. If Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is worshipped, then everyone is worshipped. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 4.31.14. Yata tura mula nishe chenena tapiyanti tat skanda bhutipos kahaska panatma pahachacha chandiyayanam tateva sarvahanam uchuchyatya. As pouring water on the roots of a tree nourishes the trunk, branches, twigs and leaves, and as supplying food to the stomach enlivens the senses and limbs of the body, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead satisfies the demigods, who are part and parcel of that Supreme Personality. Performing yagya involves worshipping the Supreme Lord. Here the Supreme Lord is worshipped, worshipping the Supreme Lord. Therefore, it is said, Bhagavan Naparanam Ije, the Lord worshipped himself by himself. This does not, of course, justify the Mayavada philosophy by when one thinks himself to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The jiva, the living entity, is always different from the Supreme Lord. The living entities, Vibhin Hamsa, never become one with the Lord. Although Mayavadis sometimes imitate the Lord's worship of himself, Lord Krishna meditated upon himself every morning as a Grihastha, and similarly Lord Ramchandra performed yagyas to satisfy himself. But this does not mean that an ordinary living being should imitate the Lord by accepting the process of Ahangraha Upasana. Such unauthorized worship is not recommended herein. Om Agyanam Tridam Dasya Janangara Shalakaya Takshom Manisham Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Garamayam Tadvati Svapadantikam Deham Shri Guru Shri Guru Kanikamalam Shri Guru Vaishvanam Scha Vivupam Sapitatam Tatam 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 Sadvaitam Savarutam Satyana 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 Devam Shri Radha Krishna Param Satyam Hey Krishna, Karuna, Sindhu, Dina, Bandhu, Jagapate, Gopisha, Gopika, Hanta, Radha, Kanta, Ramushtate, Tasno, Angi, Radha, Vinda, Vanishpuri, Vishubanu, Sim, Devi, Panamyam, Ipriye, Patubascha, Kripa, Simbo, Devacha, Patitanam Panam Riyo Vaishnibhyo Namo Namaha Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishmasai Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivinoda Swami Sinamine Namaste Sasvati Devi Gurvani Pacharine Nivasesha Shunyavadi Prasachade Satarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Sivasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sukadeva Goswami said, "Thereafter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramchandra, accepted an acharya and performed sacrifices, yagyas, with opulent paraphernalia. Thus, he himself worshipped himself, for he is the Supreme Lord of all demigods." So the context here, of course, often we hear of Lord Ram's pastimes, whether in the performance of dramas or any other narrative. We hear about Lord Ram who has to rescue Sita from Lanka. And we all know that story. But this, by the time we're here, we get to chapter 11 of the ninth canto in Lord Ram's pastimes. That has already been achieved. So now it is Ram Raj. It is the leadership of Lord Ram. He's at the moment, at least, he's actually living with Sita. Sita is now a queen. And Lord Rama, of course, is the ideal king and the ideal husband and so forth. And here, he's actually setting an example, because even though he is the Supreme Lord himself, he's actually setting an example for the society as a whole. Because he knows, Lord Rama knows, that although he is the Supreme Lord, he is eternal. He may not be in this manifestation eternally, and therefore he needs to set an example for society as a whole. And how did he do that? By placing the Brahmanas as the clear head of society. With Lord Ram's opulence and grace and majesty, still he had another quality that was very important, humility as well. There's even a pastime before he actually went to fight Ravana, he actually offered Yajna to Lord Shiva as well. So of course some people of different sampradayas might be confused by this activity, but nevertheless, as far as we are concerned, Lord Ram is Vishnu Tattva. He is the Supreme Personality Godhead, as this, of course, particular incarnation. But as we can see, Lord Ram quite often would offer sacrifices to the Supreme Lord, and of course, also the demigods. Remember also, it was the Treta Yuga. It was actually three Treta Yugas ago, if you want to get technical, about 8 million years ago. If you wasn't, people think it's the last Treta Yuga, but actually it was three Treta Yugas ago in the 25th Yuga cycle of this Manvantara. And it was around the beginning of the Treta Yuga, so things were very, 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 very opulent when compared with now. People used to live extraordinary long lengths of time, but the process of self-realization was, of course, sacrifices. Mean great big yagyas, sacrifices, and we don't mean a small fire and a couple of spoons of ghee into the fire. We are talking about opulence perhaps beyond our imagination, because Lord Ram, after Ram became king, Bharat, Shatrughna, Lakshman, they actually conquered all the directions of the world, actually, or at least of the civilized world, which of course was certainly Bharatvarsh, centered around modern-day India, but obviously spread much, much further across Asia and indeed the rest of the world. But therefore, the wealth that was at the dispense of Ayodhya and Lord Ram was immense. And sacrifices in those days were, I suppose you could say, expensive, but there was tons of ghee, huge fires, thousands of brahmanas involved. And he was Lord Ram establishing the Brahminical order. We actually hear from following purports and verses later on in this chapter that him and his brothers conquered all the directions of the world, but established brahmanas actually over the satriyas, as the actual spiritual heads. In other words, he was establishing Varna and Ashram. Lord Ram, of course, in this particular leela, was playing the role of a satya. He was a king. But one of the reasons why he didn't need to offer himself sacrifice, or yagyas and so forth, but he was establishing the Brahminical order for the betterment of the entire society. So, and even though superficially someone would argue, well, if Lord Ram is worshipping Lord Vishnu in this fire sacrifice, that means Lord Ram himself is not Lord Vishnu, surely. But actually, Lord Ram was humble enough to actually not to mind, actually. Of course, another example is, Prabhupada writes here, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead satisfies the demigods, and pouring water on the root of a tree nourishes the trunk, branches, twigs and leaves. So, of course, if the Supreme Lord, Lord Ram, Lord Krishna, is the trunk of the tree, and the human beings, Asla, are the leaves, then you could say the demigods are like the branches, so they're in between. However, if you nourish the root of the tree, the bottom of the tree, then the demigods are automatically passing that on. So you only need to concentrate on the root of the tree. So that essentially was what Lord Ram was doing in his sacrifice. He was another understood thing was that he was worshipping Lord Vishnu. So in a sense, if the Vedas, those who are familiar with it, in a Rig Veda, Atharva Veda, Shama Veda, Yajur Veda, are often prayers for the demigods, hymns, prayers to satisfy Indra, the sun god, and so forth. But the yajna we understand that Lord Ram was performing here was actually aimed at the Supreme Personality of Godhead. he was worshipping himself. That's the clue in the verse and the purport here. Of course, the demigods should be respected. They are, after all, the branches of the tree. But we, especially as a devotees, Vaishnavas, we do not focus on worshipping demigods, but we respect them. You don't disrespect each other, what to speak of disrespecting the demigods. But you understand that if you're best friends with the Prime Minister, perish the thought, maybe that's not a great example, but if you're questionable example, but if you're best mates with the Prime Minister, you live at number 11 Downing Street, then you're not really bothered about the rest of the cabinet, who are of a lower rank, because you've got access to the Prime Minister. So similarly, if you've got access to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demigods, they're there, but, well, you know, we have the secret handshake with the Lord himself, as it were. If you've got God's mobile number, as it were, you don't need his secretary. So in one sense, the demigods are playing that type of role, and demigods were worshipped and honoured, but here's Lord Ram actually establishing the Brahmanas as the head of society across the entire civilised world at the time, but also establishing the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the main focus of worship. Prabhupada also brings attention here to the fact that the Maivadi should not misunderstand this. Because a Maivadi might say, well, if one can become God, then one can worship oneself. So in other words, it's quite, when you actually take it to pieces, the sense, Maivad philosophy at first glance might appear to be attractive, especially to a neophyte or someone who's influenced by various New Age narratives and doctrines. But actually, when you take it apart, when you analyse it, when you unpack it, it doesn't really have any standing at all. Because Lord Ram was born as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not that he became or earned himself or worshipped himself so he became the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not that he achieved enlightenment and realized he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so thought, okay, I better worship myself now. Or someone else, of course, the Mayavada philosophy, Mayavada meaning that Maya is in some way more powerful than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because it suggests that the Lord himself is covered. Doesn't it? Because if you believe that you have become the Lord, but you didn't know it beforehand, therefore Maya is more powerful than you, who is the Lord. So when you unpack it, it doesn't actually make much sense. But it is an aspect, of course, of impersonal philosophy, which explores the Lord's effulgence, which, of course, is the first stage of God realization. But the Mayavada philosophy, the idea what one can... one day one realizes one is everything. One realizes one is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And any worship that goes on is ultimately for oneself, is Maya's greatest trap, actually. So on the first level, it appears to be backed up by certain scriptures. But actually, with more advanced knowledge and understanding, and of course, devotion, we can understand that we are actually, as Prabhupada writes here, we are the jiva, the living entity, is always different from the Supreme Lord. Whereas, of course, the avatars, the das avatars, Ram, the Shingadev, Kurma, Kalki, Lord Krishna, etc., come to this earth and they're born for a particular reason. They are the Lord from the beginning. So Prabhupada here makes a point of attacking the Mayavada philosophy here, which of course does have a lot of weight in India, of course. So what I wanted to explore as well was the fact that we have just started chapter 11. I've already tried to explain, well, I've explained how the context of this. Ramayana is established, there's peace in the Ayodhya, the Rakshasas have been banished from the earth, Ravana is destroyed, Lanka is a peaceful place, the Golden Palace and the civilization of Rakshasas has been laid to ruins, it would seem. And so the human beings can now live peacefully across the world. And again, significantly, all the sages and brahmanas were able, including those in the forest, were now able to do that in peace without being persecuted by the Rakshasas. Again, another reason for Lord Ram's appearance was to establish just that. And here, in one sense, Lord Ram, even during peaceful times, he's further affirming, okay, this is the process of God realization, at least in this age. Let us perform this now in peace. But the chapter 11 as a whole describes how Lord Ramchandra resided in Ayodhya with his younger brothers and performed the sacrifices. Ramchandra's faith in the Brahmanas and affection for his servants was observed by all the Brahmanas, who then offered their prayers to the Lord and returned whatever had been taken from him. They regarded the enlightenment given to them by the Lord within the core of their hearts as a sufficient contribution. In other words, they were so impressed with Lord Ram's devotion and, of course, the enlightenment that he was giving them, that they did not accept charity from him. They said, Lord, your presence here, you know, you are our charity. You know, we just want to take darshan of you. We just want to be with you. So the Lord, the Brahmanas, of course, the most realized in the society at the time, effectively knew who he was, or at least they appreciated that and understood that. So, but yet, although the Brahmanas lived simply, Ram, being a Kshatriya and a king, lived in great opulence, so much so that whenever there was a procession or a royal procession or Lord Ram in his official role, in his public role, as it were, would go on procession through the streets of Ayodhya. And the grandness of it was apparently incredible. For example, the whole streets were perfumed with water. So the whole city was actually smelling of opulent perfumes and oils. And Prabhupada explains later on in the chapter how they used to do this. There was thousands of elephants at the disposal, of course, of the elephant handlers and so forth of the palaces of the city. They would allow the elephants to drink water that was already perfumed. And as the elephants would walk in procession in front of Lord Ram, the elephants would naturally start spraying the water from their trunks in all the directions like this. So automatically purifying the streets as Lord Ram continued after. Of course, after we might think, well, elephants, I mean, so what? But when you think about it, imagine London Zoo is struggling to maintain a couple of elephants at the moment. Lord Ram had tens of thousands of elephants. So it gives you an idea of the culture. The elephants, of course, were used for all kinds of things, removing trees and breaking branches, and they were all very, very well trained as well. There were even perfume distributors as well, according to Prabhupada. You should never underestimate the power of an elephant, intelligence of an elephant. Of course, going on, as I've already mentioned, with Brahmanas of the head of society, Lord Ram made sure that everyone was happy by establishing Varna and Ashram as the skeleton, the structure, the scaffolding of his community. Like that. However, we all know the pastime of Lord Ram. I won't give away too much. I'll just say it basically, because it is something that appears later on in chapter 11. Maybe in a couple of months you'll get to it. But we know the story. Most of us know the story, where although Ram, being a famous personality, he couldn't just walk out into the streets with his crown on and saying, "Hi, I'm Lord Ram," because it just wouldn't be practical. It would be too. He was too famous. He was too popular. So he would go incognito sometimes. He would have to cover himself, maybe cover his face for sure, maybe wear a chadar, or perhaps to go in disguise as an old man, or whatever he was doing. Going around the streets, and privately, just listening to people, making sure that the people were happy. Shishirada Gokulananda Ki Jai, Shishishitanam Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shishikunitai Ki Jai. So that was one of Lord Ram's pastimes. He would actually go incognito sometimes, in disguise, listening to the people. Because sometimes, if the king comes up to somebody and says, "Oh, how are you?" "Oh, I'm fine. But Lord Ram thought, "Well, hang on, I want to really know what it's like on the street level." Because Lord Ram was so humble. Even though he lived in a great palace, his priority was his own citizens and the happiness of them. However, he used to do this quite often, but one day, unfortunately, he overheard a dobiwala in his back courtyard arguing with his wife, or he was chastising his wife. His wife, at no fault of her own, had spent some time in another man's house, but this was circumstantial. However, the dobiwala considered this to be suspicious and said in a loud voice to his wife, "You spent some time in another man's house? And now you expect me to take you back? Ha! Who do you think you are? I'm not like Lord Ram, who took Sita back after she was with Ravana. I'm not going to take you back. And of course, this upset the woman, and she must have been crying and so forth. So Lord Ram was absolutely devastated by what he heard. But notice one thing here. The happiness of a simple Dobiwala was more important to him than his own convenience and own happiness. And as a result of hearing this, he could not enjoy Sita to live in the palace. And this is a very, very... if it's misunderstood or taken out of context, it would consider to be a controversial pastime, because Lord Ram actually sent Sita out to live in the forest with Valmiki Muni. No doubt he made sure that she was safe, because Valmiki Muni was a trusted great sage. But of course she was also pregnant at the time, and in the forest she gave birth, of course, to Lord Ram's sons, Luv and Kush. This is all Leela, of course, but Lord Ram, of course, he himself stopped living in opulence. He would sleep on the floor, even though he was staying in the palace courtyard. Still, he would premises. He would live. He wouldn't eat opulently. He would fast regularly. He would sleep on the floor. He wouldn't wear crowns. He wouldn't wear his shoes, and so on and so forth. He became very, very simple because of he knew. Of course, Sita was also living in a similar way in the forest. But you have to understand the context of this. Ram was so sensitive to the well-being of his citizens. When he heard there was one Dobiwala's wife, and indeed one Dobiwala, that was unhappy about something, and also the fact that they used Sita and Ram as an example to fuel that unhappiness they had, that domestic feud, he could not enjoy his kingdom anymore. This is an example of great... it's a leela, of course, and it is often difficult for us to understand how Ram could send Sita away, especially during her pregnancy. But it is at least an understanding of how detached Ram was, and how the happiness of his citizens was more important than his own happiness. So when understood in the right context, it's a very, very great sacrifice that Lord Ram made. Of course, when Sita passed away, returned to Mother Earth, Lord Ram, as an example of his love for Sita, he actually performed great sacrifices again and penances for the next 13,000 years before he actually left this world. What can we learn from this? Most leelas, there's a lesson to learn from this. And I was reading this and I realized what that lesson was. That ultimately we have to be detached. It doesn't matter who you are, great king, great a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, whatever we happen to be, and obviously Ram was far greater a powerful king than any of us will ever be, and yet still he detached himself away from it in the latter years of his life. In a sense, he took a form of sannyas, actually, like that. So of course, whatever riches we have to attain, we cannot take any of it with us at the time of death. So again, Lord Ram was actually teaching by example. And in that way, he was the ideal king, and indeed, the ideal husband. So what I wanted to do, I didn't want to go into too much detail, because there's many more verses on Lord Ram in this particular pastime to follow, which no doubt you'll hear about in future classes. But today, of course, is the appearance day of Narottam Das Thakur, which Nandan Prabhu kindly texts me to remind me, so thank you for that reminder. So what I'm going to do in the second half of the class, of course, I wanted to talk about Narottam Das Thakur. Of course, he's famous for... He was born a bit later than Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda and the Goswamis as well. So, he was a bit younger than the others. But he was, after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya, Narottam Das Thakur, he was responsible, of course, for spreading the Gaudiya tradition, Lord Chaitanya's mercy, throughout Orissa and Bengal. So... And yet that is, of course, an achievement in himself. But let us find out a little bit more about his personality. Again, like one of the Goswamis, who's actually born significantly into a palace. His father was King Krishnananda Datta, so he was actually from, an opulent family, which, of course, we know he was later to renounce. His king ruled the area of Gopalpura in Rajasthani district, which is today in Bangladesh. His mother was Narayani Devi, and he was born on the Purnim in January, in 1520 AD, approximately 1520, so say the scholars. Who was born, of course, as the tradition, the astrologers came, and the astrologers could immediately see from the looking at Narottam's chart, they could see that this is going to be an extraordinary person. He's either going to be a famous or great empowered mendicant or a very, very opulent king. Of course, we know what happened. But of course, Narottama also showed all the bodily symptoms of a Mahapurush, an exalted divine person. He had long arms, a deep navel, golden complexion, beautiful eyes shaped like lotus petals, which of course reminds us of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda as well, incidentally. At school, he was a shutidar, able to memorize whatever he heard. So he'd only hear anything once and remember it. So you could be chanting mantras for a very, very long time, hours. He'd be able to recall it just by hearing it once. That's the kind of memory he had. So everyone was amazed at the school. They could see, well, Narottama was an extraordinary personality. Of course, he quickly mastered Sanskrit and the Vedas, and his only interest was, of course, to serve Lord Krishna. He was also attracted to Lord Chaitanya, but something very happened to him. He was still a very young man. He was at the age of 12. Something extraordinary happened to him. Of course, we learned about Lord Nityananda, of course, at the weekend in the form of a nice drama. But Nityananda again appeared in the dream of Narottama Das Thakur. He was having a dream, and suddenly Lord Nityananda said, "I want you now to bathe in the Padma River, because there you will receive what you want. You will receive love of Godhead. Lord Gauranga has blessed it. Please, you should bathe in this river." So, of course, as soon as he got up, that's exactly what he did. He ran to the river, he bathed in that river. And this river was a place, this place in the river, of course, was blessed. And this is where Lord Chaitanya had left this pure love of Godhead, had left this Krishna Bhakti, this devotion. So, of course, after bathing this river, Narottama Das Thakur became completely self-realized and full of bliss. He was receiving that love of Godhead. And, of course, at that moment onwards, although he was already an extraordinary person, at this point, he really did change, and of course, he became more and more detached from his father's kingdom. And they could see the astrologers, the prediction by the astrologers, the fact that he would be a great mendicant, became more and more obvious, that he wasn't going to effectively inherit his father's kingdom. Of course, later on, not long after, actually, Lord Chaitanya himself appeared in Narottama's dream and said, "Now you've got to go to Vrindavan." Of course, Narottama also, just incidentally, one of the reasons why there was no way he could inherit his father's kingdom was that he was going to be a lifelong brahmachari as well. So that was another reason why I think his parents were absolutely, a bit like Nityananda actually, that his parents were very, very attached to their son. Of course they were. And they were, just like in the past times of Lord Nityananda, that his parents were devastated when he left home. But he did. And he had a bigger mission ahead. He would maintain himself on his way to Vrindavan, travelling around India, visiting all the holy places. He would maintain himself by observance of the vow of Madhukari, which means he would only eat what he could beg from going door to door. Just like a bee going from one flower to another, just taking what he could, what was ever offered. And if he was in a town or village where no one was giving him anything, he would go without. So Narottama was indeed a mendicant. He simply relied on the mercy of the Lord. Yet he would also preach. Remember, at this time he'd already had that mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was preaching with great enthusiasm and great vigour about the mercy of Gauranga. Significant methods as well. One of his things, he would break down the caste system. This was an element of corruption, actually, of the earlier Varna and Ashram, which we mentioned earlier in connection with Lord Ram's Leela. By the 15th century, of course, the caste system, the Varna and Ashram Dharma became known as a caste system, but it wasn't exactly quite right. Kali Yuga had set in on this system by then. And, of course, whatever Varna and Ashram one is in, it is by personal qualification, not only by birth. But by this understanding, it was understood by birth. So there was a lot of social constrictions and limitations on, in those days, who had access to the certain scriptures, for example, who was able to read, what symptoms one could show, the devotion that one was able to express, often was determined by one's social standing and where one was externally. Narottama was against all this. His main preaching, actually, was to say, it doesn't matter who you are, or what varna you are, what ashram you are, your gender, Doesn't matter, birth, age, caste, creed, shoe size, education, social status, CV. Anyone can attain one's own role, in one's own priority. One should define oneself only by one's relationship with Krishna. And this was his main thing. This is a great contribution of Narottam Das Thakur, and actually formed the basis, the foundation of the Gaudiya tradition after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya himself. And he said, nor is Krishna consciousness advancement dependent on household duties, taking sannyas, ritualistic performances, yagyas, etc. Simply, how one is absorbed in one's service to Krishna is what really counts. This was his approach. Eventually, of course, Narottam, he got to Vrindavan by foot, where he was received by Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. Of course, they were themselves, of course, self-realized souls. They knew he was coming. They themselves had had visions and premonitions that the great personality was coming to Vrindavan. So when he arrived, they were there for him. They met him with great respect. Narottam took Diksha initiation from Lokanath Goswami. Lokanath instructed him in turn to go and study under Jiva Goswami. Of course, that's where he studied in more detail. And he visited all the holy places and pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, including places like Radhakund, Shyamakund, and the various pastimes of Lord Krishna, as revealed, uncovered by Lord Chaitanya and the Goswamis. When Narottam got back to Navadvipa, all the devotees asked him about the health and activities of the Goswamis in Vrindavan. They were eager to hear the news. After visiting all of Gauranga's pastimes in the area, Narottam did the same, of course, in Jagannath Puri as well, where he would go to the temple, of course, or he would go by the beach, where he would be aware of where Lord Chaitanya used to be, where he would visit all the temples and receive great ecstasy by feeling the presence, the spiritual presence of Mahaprabhu. 50 years after the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Narottam, of course, was becoming quite senior. But he arranged the first Gaurpaneem festival in Katuri to honour the divine appearance of Mahaprabhu. During that festival, 6 deities were installed. During that festival, with his sweet voice, Narottam began a wonderful kirtan during the Gaurpaneem festival. His chanting brought down the tears of prem from the eyes of the devotees, who were all sporting in the ocean of ecstasy. It was written that in the midst of their kirtan, the munificent Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself and all his personal associates appeared in that kirtan and joined in. Like a flash of lightning in the midst of a mass of beautiful blue clouds, Mahaprabhu himself appeared in the crowd of devotees through a divine manifestation, just because of Narottam's singing. Of course, this wasn't the only festival that Narottam organized. He organized annual festivals across Bengal, which served at the time, because remember, by this time the Goswamis themselves were either senior or had left the world themselves. So a lot of the mission was left in the hands, of course, of Lord Nityananda's wife, Janavi Devi, but also Narottam as well, who were organizing festivals to keep the community of Vaishnavas together, Gaudi Vaishnavas together. And then a significant meeting took place in Katuri where the Gaudi Vaishnava theology of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement was defined. And that was around in about 1572. So this gives you an idea. Actually, Narottam was right at the center of establishing the Gaudi Vaishnav community and the specific philosophy which we experience today. Narottam, as years went by, Narottam made thousands of disciples, mostly around modern-day Bangladesh. He passed away from this world in old age under a tamarind tree by Premagat, by the side of the Ganges at Katuri, where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had sat before. There he felt great separation from Mahaprabhu, Nityananda, and of course his spiritual masters, Diksha, Shikshagurus, the Goswamis. And there, of course, he would chant Hare Krishna intensely, and a great sense, a great feeling of separation from those that he'd loved so much. And just to finish, I wanted to share with you, because one of the things that Narottam was famous for was his writings and his songs. For example, this songbook here, there's a whole chapter on songs, devotional songs, written by Narottam Das Thakur. which are very, very beautiful, very emotional. Again, and just the way they were written, and of course the translations, of course, one can actually enter into, if one can, enter into some of those feelings of separation and devotion experienced by Narottam. Narottam was known for his devotional poetry, where he describes emotionally intense feelings towards Radha and Krishna. His prayers, Sri Rupa Manjari Pada and Sri Guru Chana Padma, of course, are, especially Sri Prabhupada's Guru Puja there, we sing it all the time, Sri Guru Chana Padma. That was written by Narottam Das Thakur. Prabhupada himself actually often cited Narottam's prayers, as did many other Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas. Prabhupada actually wrote about this. He said, this sound is above the material platform. These are Prabhupada's words. It is directly from the spiritual platform, and there is no need of understanding the language either. It is just like a thunderbolt. He's talking specifically about Narottam's songs here. These songs are above the material platform, and they crack like thunder within your heart. So we understand songs such as Sapasada Bhagavad Viraha Janita Vidipa, for example. This is what he wrote during his last few years on the banks of the Ganges, during essentially his songs of separation. So I wanted to finish by sharing this with you. Most of you will know. I'm just going to do my best to sing a couple of verses, and I'll just do the translations and verses as we go along for this song. The English translation would be Lamentation Due to Separation from the Lord and His Associates.
Jayanilo Premadana Karuna Pacho Heinu Prabhu Koita Gela Acharya Thakur Kamara Saruprupa Kasanatan Kadasaragunatha Patita Pavan.
He who bought the treasure of divine love and who was filled with compassion and mercy, where has such a personality as Sri Vasacharya gone? Where are my Sharup Damodar and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatan? Where is Raghunath Das, the saviour of the fallen?
Kahamara Bhata Juga Kaha Kaviraj Eka Kale Koita Gela Kodanataraj Pashane Kotibo Mata Anale Pashibo Gorange Gurya Nidi Koita Gele Pabo.
Where are my Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta? And where is Krishna Das Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into the fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities?
Se saba sangira sange je koilo pilas Se sangana paya kande norotamadas.
Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all these devotees, in whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottam Das simply weeps. Hare Krishna. Anybody would like to add anything, or correct me on any mistakes, or?